It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and wow, we've got a great show planned for you today. Steve, do you feel outnumbered? Because we have two of my favorite women in studio with us.
Yes, like I said, the three of you coming down the hall was kind of like the three musketeers are here.
And we are. So in studio with me is Susan Kochevar, entrepreneur, owner of the 88 Drive-In Theater. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
And also in studio with me is businesswoman Patty Kurgan, and also the researcher for the Kim Munson Show. Great to have you here.
Good morning, Kim.
We're going to be talking about forced minimum wage. And man, oh man, it is a bad, bad deal. We're starting to see the effects of it. And, you know, people can be very well-intentioned, or so they say. But when you look at the real effects and what it does to people, I mean, it's astonishing. So we'll get to that here in just a little bit. We'll also, I hope, get to this point. We've got so much on the show, but Patty, you had found some information regarding Governors Hickenlooper and Polis were using a 9/11 account as their piggy bank. You know, Governor Hickenlooper was actually flying around on Elon Musk's brother's plane. And so there was an ethics complaint about that. And apparently Governor Hickenlooper was using this some of this 9/11 fund money for his legal bills, right?
Right, which is unimaginable for the fact that the fund was actually put out in 2003, and it was part of getting the economy going again after 9/11.
Okay, and so hopefully we'll get to that, but we're watching that because, interestingly enough, then shortly before Governor Hickenlooper left office, he issued an executive order that was very advantageous to Tesla, and Elon Musk is the head guy at Tesla. Hickenlooper's flying around on his brother's plane. I mean, it looks kind of interesting, Susan Kochevar.
Yeah, it looks very bad.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get to that. But before we do that, we will, in segments 3 and 4, talk about the forced minimum wage. Before we get to all of that, though, as we look at these issues, it's freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. You can vote yourself into it, but it is pretty darn tough to get out of it, as you've said many times, Steve.
Yeah, the original meme that we spotted said you have to shoot your way out of it.
Yeah, we don't want to get to that point. That's why we are engaging in the battle of ideas. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether with a weapon. But what we're seeing in Colorado, it's with policy and unpredictable and excessive taxation. If something is a good idea, you should not have to use force to implement it. And I want to say thank you to the team, to Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. Steve, doing a great job. Patty, it's great to have you in studio. I really appreciate all the hard work you put in on all the research.
You know, I actually enjoyed, and I'm glad that we can pass that on to all the listeners.
Well, and we've got about 4 hours worth of research here. So we're going to, as you say, Steve, we're going to put, 10 pounds of stuff into a 5-pound package here, huh?
Every day.
Every day.
Thanks, Patty.
You can rest assured that this hour you are going to get so much information that you are ready for the day. Susan, you know what? And I was looking at my phone because I always have my phone here because you send me these great text messages. But I don't have to look at my phone because you're here.
Yeah, that's right. And I want to chime in, too. Thank you, Patty, because while I'm driving around or I'm sitting home at my desk doing my taxes this time of year, doing W-2s yesterday, I can take all of that time that Patty puts into it and it gets percolated down to just the essentials of all the stuff I need to know and kind of try to keep track of everything, especially as a business owner. This minimum wage stuff is going to crash us.
It really is. And to all of you listening, thank you. Each of you, you're treasured, you're valued. You have a purpose. So today, strive for excellence, take care of your heart, soul, mind, and body. Go to my website, Kim Munson, that's spelled MONSON.com, and sign up for our email newsletters. We send those out once a week to keep you apprised of what's going on. Also, we have our writer's circle. We're getting that ramped up again. Rick Turnquist will be in studio on Friday. I think we'll be pushing his piece out tomorrow. Very important piece. And the podcast, the shows, and the show recaps are all there. So go to kimmunson.com. Okay, our inspiration for today. And I think that this is very relevant to what is going on in Colorado. It's Thomas Jefferson. This was in his first inaugural address, March 4th, 1801. And as all you know, he was a U.S. founding father, drafted the Declaration of Independence, and was the third U.S. president. And Susan, I'm going to go to you first on a comment after this, and then you, Patty, to see what you think. Thomas Jefferson, he said, "A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement." So forced minimum wage flies in the face of that.
We are so far from what the founders set out. You know, everybody likes to get into government and try to force everybody to live their way. And that's not freedom.
It is not freedom. And Patty, you and I have talked a lot about this, the freedom for people, for an employer and employee to be able to negotiate, pay, flex time, all those things. Government should not be involved in that. That's one of the reasons you actually spoke at the Stand for Colorado rally on this forced paid family leave. You and I we're not against paid family leave, but we're against the government being involved in that and forcing it.
Absolutely. The fact of the matter is everybody's an individual and their circumstances are different. So you just can't have this one box solution for everybody. And the government can't know what's going on in Susan's business and your business and my business. So just let us handle it with our employees, especially today, because the unemployment rate is essentially at zero. When you're below three, just say it's zero. Mm-hmm. And if I train somebody and we have some kind of disagreement and they walk out the door, that's just 3 months gone. Not just of my time training the person, but money, and I have to start all over again. We're going to bend over backwards for really good people who want to work.
Well, and the other thing is when government comes in to be the quote-unquote great equalizer, it actually penalizes people that might be working harder and trying to move up the ladder, and maybe somebody else has other things going on in their life and they may not be working as hard. That's their choice. But with government coming in trying to equalize that, you penalize the person that may be working harder and rewarding the person that may not. And Susan, I mean, you're nodding your head on that one.
Right. There's a friend of ours, Yaron Brook, who wrote a book, Equal is Unfair. I believe everyone should pick up a copy and take a look at that. You cannot make things equal. Everybody is different. You have to be able to make your own choices.
Right. And so, again, this was Thomas Jefferson, first inaugural address. "A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement." And, Patty, I'm just going to say this thing from injuring one another. You and I were both downtown for the Stand for Colorado rally, and we saw all of the homeless encampments and trash and just, I mean, it was somewhat astounding to me. And in a way, government is enabling that here in Colorado. And in a way, it's injuring others because it is infringing upon their property rights. And so our Colorado government really should pay attention to what Thomas Jefferson had to say, Patty.
Yes. Well, and they're not doing the homeless any favor the way that they're handling it right now.
No, they're not.
And then it does a lot of people say, hey, I don't want to be down by the Capitol anymore. Or was it about 3-4 weeks ago, right before Christmas break, we had that group of students who did not have a very favorable
interaction. Oh, that's right, down by the library.
The art museum, I think it
was. Well, art museum, okay.
Right. So now you don't want to take your kids down to the museums that are in that area.
Because there were some kids that I guess a number of the homeless people were yelling at them, and you know, these were just little kids, and they're kind of like, ah, what's
right,
going on?
Right, right. Obscenities were stated. I think there was some spitting.
Yeah.
There's some research going around where these people are interviewing the homeless. So there was a YouTube that I watched, this young man interviewing a homeless man downtown Denver, and he's talking to the man, and the man says, well, he just got out of the hospital because he'd had a surgery for an aneurysm. And he's homeless. And then the next picture you see of him, he's taking a puff of his cigarette, and he's complaining because the Denver, you know, buses them to a warehouse to keep them warm and dry. Well, hold on a second here. You got a surgery to save your life. They are trying to bus you to keep you somewhere warm. And I'm just trying to show that sometimes people complain about things and don't look at the opportunities or the things that are done for them already. He's homeless. He's complaining. They're just going to euthanize us one day. You just got a surgery at taxpayer expense, and you're smoking a cigarette. And he's complaining because he's on Social Security and he can't afford a place. I think maybe he's not trying.
Well, and the other thing about it is some, these many of these big issues like homelessness, affordable housing, I'm starting to call them the homelessness industrial complex. There are so many people that are actually making a living. There's bureaucrats and there's people. And on one hand, I mean, there are nonprofits that seriously are there working hard. But if we were really serious about this problem, we could fix it. But instead, it's getting worse. Steve, what do you have to say about that?
I swear, you know, we're time constrained and you guys have already touched on probably four different show topics that we could spend an hour on.
Well,
I'm just going back to last Wednesday, Stanford, Colorado, when I was approaching the Capitol complex. I had just come up the 16th Street Mall, and I'm crossing over Colfax at Lincoln. And halfway across the street, all of a sudden, this smell greeted me, and it was the smell of marijuana coming out of the Civic Center Park area. Now, okay, it's legal. That's, you know, I'm not making any kind of a stand there. But then once I got to the safely to the sidewalk, I stopped and looked over at the park, and just many groups of people standing around, and this is the way we pass the day.
And it's like, it costs money to buy that. So right. Where does the money come from?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying with the cigarettes and the different things this man was doing. What choices is he making?
Right, because clearly he has resources.
Clearly.
He's making choices on what he does with those resources. We've gotten very serious on this Thomas Jefferson quote. We're going to go to break, and a couple of things. Before we do that, though, a little levity. Ronald Reagan, many of you may remember this. This was the 1992 presidential convention, and apparently Bill Clinton was talking a lot about he was you know, I think it's, isn't it William Jefferson Clinton? I think that's his name. So he was comparing himself to Thomas Jefferson. And this was Ronald Reagan's response.
But listen to me. This fellow they've nominated claims he's the new Thomas Jefferson. Well, let me tell you something. I knew Thomas Jefferson. He was a friend of mine. And Governor, you're no Thomas Jefferson.
That was Ronald Reagan at, I mean, he was a master at that, taking a little bit of humor and being able to drill down on that. So we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, want to say congratulations to the LSU Tigers, who won the college football national championship last night. And I tuned in just after it had started. And Susan, I think that you saw, I did see President Trump and Melania were there, but you said that the crowd was very excited they were there, huh?
They were. They gave them a standing ovation, and even the president and Melania looked a little astonished.
Well, because they get so many arrows thrown at them all the time, Patty. Did you happen to see that beginning?
No, I did not.
Okay. So, but before we go to break, and now that we're through the college football championship, we're moving into the NFL championships. And it is the place to watch the games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of television, so you won't miss any of the action. You can join them for the big game, and you'll be entered for a chance to win a 55-inch HD TV. They have some new roasted wings. Ladies, I think we're going to have to try those the next time you guys come over as the new roasted wings. And so you can try those out while you're watching the Avs and the Nuggets. And Hooters has Xfinity, so, you know, I guess it's kind of difficult to get to watch the Avs and the Nuggets right now because there's this contract dispute on broadcasting and all. So you can see the games at Hooters Wednesday, if you dine in, it's wing day. All the wings you can eat for $15.99. And if you don't want to cook or have folks coming over, you can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door. For more information, go to my website, kimmunson.com. And all of my valued sponsors are there. Susan Kochvar, 88 Drive-In Theater, you are a valued sponsor. You have your whole landing page there.
Thank you.
So go there, kimmunson.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with businesswomen Patty Kergan and Susan Kochvar. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, KimMunson.com, and sign up for our email newsletter. The next thing that we want to get to, thrilled to have in studio Susan Kochvar and Patty Kergan. Steve, you have been wanting to get to this for like about a week. Patty had put this on the headlines, and that was from CPR.org, says that Colorado will offer $100 for the college piggy banks of every kid born or adopted in the state starting January 1. To get the money, parents will have to open a 529 college savings account with College Invest, a nonprofit arm of the state government. Now, $100 won't pay for many credits, even with the 18 years of interest, but it could start family savings, said Angela Bear, CEO of College Invest. We wanted it to be a significant enough amount that it would cause behavior change, that people would be incentivized to open that account, Bear said. It changes their perspective of going to college if they just know they have an account in their name. Known as First Steps, the $100 contribution is available to U.S. citizens and others with Social Security or federal tax numbers. Interesting. Mm. The program will allow people to open accounts with no money down. Now, Steve, the first time you looked at this headline, I thought I saw steam coming out of your ears. So what's your comment?
Well, you're training us, you're teaching us. Well, there are certain buzzwords to look for when there's things like this rolling downhill, like other things that go downhill. Incentivized. Mm-hmm. Did you see that? Wasn't that one of your buzzwords?
Yeah, and then there's behavior change.
Oh, yes.
Really? Is that, Susan, is that the proper role of government?
It is not.
What do you think, Patty?
Absolutely not.
And why is it that we would be giving every kid $100? I have to tell you, I'm not so totally convinced that a college education is necessary anymore. Patty, what's your thoughts?
You know what? I have a grandson, and I think of that at times, like, you know, is it really worth saving for college? For the fact that I think it's going to be totally different with the way the internet is set up, all the educational websites that are on there, you can get it free. I'm not sure it's going to be worth it, and especially as we keep looking at the costs going up and up, as we did, you know, last fall, Colorado College being around $77,000 per year, and even Boulder was quite expensive, and it just is there the return? I think in specific industries like engineering,
oh, sure,
in the medical industry, or you want to be a doctor, dentist, I think for that you'll have to go for, but for a lot of your jobs today, and people don't even have a business background and they're in business. So I don't think so.
I'm not totally convinced on that as well. And then I am seeing that, you know, for the first couple of years, some of these classes they have to take is just fluff. And so it costs money, but it doesn't really help them as they're, you know, moving into their career. And and it's putting off, in some ways, people growing up, Susan.
No, I totally agree. And I'm very disturbed by some of the things that they're teaching these students. They're not, you know, giving them the tools to learn to reason and think. They're just filling them with propaganda. And we see even the software companies and Apple and others are hiring people, and they're saying you don't need a degree. It's I don't think it's necessary anymore. We aren't having, again, unless you're, like Patty says, you're going to medical or engineering or something like that, you're just being saddled with tons of debt. You're not ever going to be able to pay off. You're essentially becoming a slave. And I think that's a terrible thing to saddle our kids with.
Yeah. Well, I've actually talked to a fair number of employers, and they say when they hire somebody today out of college, one of the first things they say is forget everything you've learned. You're going to learn it here.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, even when I went to college, everything I learned about business and the things that really made me successful were the stuff I learned growing up in a small business.
Well, and being able to work,
yes.
Which this goes back to the discussion we were going to have. I guess we're going to do that in segments 3 and 4, and that's the forced minimum wage. But the ability for kids to get that first job and to be able to learn from that first job is really important. And Patty, what about the fairness of this? What about the fairness of what if that kid doesn't go to college then? What if he decides that he gets to the age of 18 and is invested in this, and he decides that he wants to go to technical school so that he can learn welding? And so does he lose the money? I mean, what happens with that? Why is government forcing this?
Well, I don't have the answers because that's not in the bill. I'm guessing a technical school would be qualified because I know with some 529s, it's like any kind of educational experience. My question is, though, so it's $100, so what? How far does that go? And as we all know, funds charge a fee, a yearly fee. So I don't even know if the $100 would cover the yearly fee for the person to get to 18 years old. $100 is nothing.
Okay. So let's break this out just a little bit now again. So this $100 is forcibly being taken from people, right? Via taxes or somehow fees, and they call them fees now. So it's forcibly being taken, and government is now picking a winner. And that is College Invest is the place where the money is going to go. So they're going to be getting the management fees. I can't imagine that Angela Baer, who is the CEO, is working for free. Now, many people talk about free college, but I don't think that she's planning on working for free. I mean, I've got to think that they're charging some kind of a fee. So government is taking money from people A, and they're picking a winner, put it into College Invest, who will be probably getting some kind of a management fee over the next 18 years. That doesn't seem fair to me, Patty.
Right. Well, it goes back to what we were saying earlier about the homeless, that there's those intermediate groups who are really getting the money, and it's not really going to the homeless who need it. So the funding is not going to the people that it's supposed to go to. It's actually making the middleman.
Goes to the bureaucracy.
That's so interesting that you would say that, because a number of years ago, our church was doing some different things around the holidays. And so we were supposed to go to, this was a place where homeless were being fed, and do a survey. And so I was doing the survey with this guy, and he said, I don't know, why you're doing this. He said they come out all the time and they want surveys, but they never do anything about this. They just want information, and they, meaning the bureaucrats and politicians, never do anything about this. And that was kind of where I first started to realize that this was a business, that in fact there was this kind of industrial complex, that if in fact they were serious about really addressing the homeless problem, we would be making progress instead of it getting worse and worse. Steve, what do you want to say?
Well, this is kind of tongue-in-cheek. Hopefully it'll, again, if you didn't laugh, you'd cry. I talked to you about this a little bit after the show. In the hours leading up to our show is the Angie Austin, Michael Pelka show. They covered a story yesterday over the state of California. Some genius out there has realized that roadkill really might be something to look into as being harvested.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're setting up and looking into some type of government office that will track roadkill. Because once you come across roadkill, then you'll make a phone call to somebody and you'll notate what kind of animal and all that kind of stuff. And as the story was over, Opelka blurted out, more government.
More government, another government program.
Well, here, talking about another government program, as long as we're talking about college, I just wanted to bring up that it was in the Gazette where they had a brief article saying that Democrat senators Stephen Fenberg of Boulder and Rachel Zenzinger of Arvada, they're going to be introducing a bill to repay student loan debt for the first 2 years after a student gets out of college. So they have to stay in they have to go to a Colorado college, and they have to stay here for 2 years. But if they do that, then they'll get some of their school debt relieved, and the initial cost is $14 million that they're looking for the first 3 years. We all know that regardless of what they say the real number is, like pre-K, how many millions of dollars were they short there? I'm sure the $14 million is short there, because they're saying that they figure they're only going to serve about 5,300 people.
Okay, so the question then on the table is who chooses the 5,300?
Right.
Right?
And who's calculating the ROI, return on investment? I want to see. That's an awful lot of money just for that few number of students.
Right. So, you know what? I have an idea how to forgive college debt, and that is that, in fact, college students do not actually go out and are able to get a job, you know, that they think that they're going to get after they graduate, that perhaps maybe instead of having the taxpayers pay their college debt, we should start to tap the college endowment funds.
That's a good idea.
You like that one?
Yeah.
Let's ask Jason McBride what he thinks about that. Jason McBride, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful.
Yeah, so what do you think about that? Should we start to tap college endowments for to pay off student loans? Because they're the ones that are getting all the money in the first place, is the colleges.
Well, I think that's been brought up before, and they are resisting it. And I would guess it's because they know their education they provide is so inferior that the kids will never be able to pay off the student loans, and they don't want to invest their money in a bad place.
So if people don't have skin in the game and are not willing to do that, then maybe we need to revisit that. So, hey, what do you think of my Thomas Jefferson quote and my Reagan soundbite? What do you think of that?
Boy, he's always got some good ones. He's just one of the best at humor, and his delivery was so good.
I know.
He had another thing he said, I think, during that same speech that I thought was great, if you have 2 seconds.
Sure.
Yeah, he says, talking about the Democrats, he says, they put on quite a production in New York a few weeks ago. You might even call it slick. A stone's throw from Broadway it was, and how appropriate. Over and over, they told us that they're not the party they were. They kept telling us with a straight face that they're for family values. They're for a strong America. They're for less intrusive government. And they call me an actor.
Yeah, he was great. So, but Jason, this week, in getting serious about things, we'll be digging a little deeper into what the SECURE Act might mean for folks in real life. Mm-hmm. Another change is that now we can contribute to our traditional IRAs at any age, right?
Yeah, that's right, Kim. Up until this year, before the SECURE Act, individual had to stop making contributions to their traditional IRA at age 70 and a half. Now, you're able to continue contributions to a 401k or a company plan if you were still working, but not to a traditional IRA.
Okay, so what if I'm retired and just living the life of luxury off my investments? Can I still contribute?
Well, you have to have earned income to make a contribution, and the powers that be, unfortunately, don't consider investment income or rental income to be earned income. It has to come from a J-O-B job.
Okay. So if I'm 85 years old and still working, I can still contribute if I want to, if I'm getting earned income, right? Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Now, when I was on hold, Steve said that's the situation that you're in right now.
Really? Is that what Steve
said?
Yeah,
he did. Yeah.
Okay, Steve, we're going to talk about that after the show. Okay, so what happens to me right now then, Jason?
Well, there isn't any age limit discussed in the act, so as far as I can tell, as long as you have earned income, you could certainly keep socking money away even at age 85, 90, or 100.
But don't you have to do these required minimum distributions at age 72?
You know, it is kind of funny. That's right, Kim. So theoretically, you could be putting money in and taking money out in the same year. You get a tax deduction for the in money, but then you pay tax on the out money. And if the maximum contribution is $7,000, which is currently what it is, if your IRA was worth $179,000 and change, Kim, then at age 72, you'd have to take out the same $7,000 that you'd be putting in.
Oh, my gosh, Jason, my eyes are glazing over. That's why people need you. You know it?
Well, it's interesting.
Okay. So it's pretty mind-bending to me. So what about it?
Well, I agree. It could be kind of like trying to keep a bathtub full with the drain plug out. But before, it was kind of like taking the plug out and shutting off the tap. So, yeah, it's weird. But it's still a bit more freedom than we had before, so that's good.
Well, that is good. So does this apply to 401ks or Roth IRAs also?
No, it doesn't, Kim. 401ks have always allowed contributions past age 70, again, as long as you are still employed, and Roth IRAs have as well, again, as long as you have earned income. The difference is with a 401k, if you're still working, you don't have to take an RMD, so the plug stays in the tub until you retire, and Roth IRAs don't have any required minimum distributions, so the plug can theoretically stay in forever, or at least until you kick the bucket, or, well, maybe I should say until you go down the drain and sticking with the spirit of the bathtub example.
So who will this be most helpful to?
Well, I think this could help people who have gotten behind a little bit on their savings for whatever reason. Kim, if let's say you're 70 and a half or 72, you're still working and you have a very small IRA, that means the required minimum distribution would be very small. So if you could put in that $7,000 a year for a few extra years, that could put some water in the empty tub for you, so to speak.
Okay, and, you know, I used to think it was above my pay grade, Jason, to read legislation, to read these different acts, but you actually have a copy of the SECURE Act, and people can get that from you, correct?
Yeah, well, we don't have a copy of the entire act, Kim, but we have a piece that hits some of the main points of the SECURE Act.
Okay.
And folks can get that if they just go to airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. And you can download your free copy. And, you know, if you want a printed one, just give me a call, and I'll make sure to send one out to you.
And that phone number you can call after 7:30. Natalie will be at the switchboard, is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, thank you so much. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, ladies, have a great show.
We're working on it, Jason, so have a great day. And this is Kim Munson. In studio is businesswomen Susan Kochevar and Patty Kurgan. We're going to talk about what's really going to happen to everyday people with the forced minimum wage. You won't want to miss what we are figuring out here. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. In studio with me is Patty Kurgan. She does the research for the Kim Munson Show, and Susan Kochevar, who is the owner of 88 Drive-In Theater. And Patty, you're also a businesswoman in your own right. Forced minimum wage. Ladies, we've been very, very concerned about this. We saw that Denver had passed this and was going through headlines last week, you and I, Patty, and three restaurants have closed on South Pearl. I am hearing prices going up at people's favorite fast food joints. We're starting to see the effects of something that supposedly was supposed to help people, but the effects are hurting people. Joe Otto, when he was in studio yesterday, said that he had talked to a friend of his that, 18 to 20% of people working in the fast food industry may lose their jobs?
Right. Within the next year.
I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
I'm looking to put a couple things in that will downsize my staff, so I won't have to have 20 people this year.
But what does that do to people that were depending on those jobs?
It really hurts them. Sometimes they're just depending on a little extra money, or sometimes they're looking for, just their first-time job. So it really hurts them.
Well, and Patty, to what Susan has just said, making some changes, automation, you and I were chatting about it last night. And, I think that we're going to start to see more and more empty buildings because of this.
Oh, absolutely. Even the restaurant industry in Forbes, they had an article talking about how it will change drastically the next few years. And they're talking about artificial intelligence. And even with restaurants, they're talking about ghost kitchens because it has increased drastically as to people eating restaurant food in their homes. And now that you have Dash and Uber Eats and things like that, people don't feel like they need to go to a restaurant anymore. So now you've gotten rid of your staff, basically your waitresses and your hosts and your waiters, and you're having these ghost kitchens. And then Uber Eats is really responsible for the delivery. So you're getting rid of some of your responsibility. And, it's not just minimum wage. It's property taxes are going up. Granted, they don't own the facility, but their rents go up because mm-hmm. that's what, if you have ever rented, you know that that's one of
it's
the clauses.
It's passed on to the
it's passed
the return.
On. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, it's, and then even Governor Polis has stated that he wants $400 million from business owners to, he believes that there needs to be more reserves in the unemployment compensation fund. So that's going to be another tax that's going to be hitting business owners.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like, how much more can you take out of the pockets of restaurant businesses? And a lot of people don't realize the margins are not that high. I know a few people who have owned restaurants and they're out of the business now, or some who are still in there. And surprisingly enough, they were all using the same profit margin, which was 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So you put in this increase of minimum wages, your rent's going up.
Yeah, you can only charge customers so much. And that's the thing they all forget. All the money businesses get, whether you're renting out a complex for a restaurant or whatever you're doing, comes from your customers. That's where
right.
it comes from.
Well, and Susan, I want to talk a little bit about that first job. The minimum wage job is typically never supposed to be, quote unquote, the living wage job that all of these PBIs talk about, and that they feel so altruistic that they will use their governmental power to push this forced minimum wage because, quote unquote, we want to help people. But I remember my first job, I probably should have paid them because they were training me. But the other thing is when people are idle, when they don't have a job, then they start to make choices that may not be the best for them. They may get into trouble. My dad always said idle hands are the devil's workshop. So if kids no longer have this job, I think it creates more opportunity for making bad choices. And gainful employment is really a gift. I think one of the most compassionate things a person can do is to give another person a job. So when we look at this forced minimum wage, the effects of it are one of the most uncompassionate things that can happen out there, Susan Kochevar.
Absolutely. And people, sitting around at home, they're having a hard time getting a job. Envy starts to grow of all the other people that seem like they have stuff. And that's a very bad thing to happen. Then they start pushing for laws and things that snatch what other people have. That's very bad. The other thing that happens in this forced minimum wage is not only will I hire fewer people, but the people that I do have, I can give a smaller raise to. So those folks who work for me, they prove that they come in every day on time and do a great job for my customers, they get a smaller raise. And that's really unfair.
Well, and the other thing about this, it's not just that minimum wage that goes up for the worker. Then all the employment taxes that the employer has to pay, those go up also. And Patty, I think you just alluded to this. And you know, we talked about it before we came on the air. All of these different taxes and fees and rules and regulations, where will this group down at the State House stop? And Susan, you said, well, they want it all.
I think they do. You know, the other thing I forgot to say is that this forced minimum wage, all it does is create a leveling of wages. So prices rise and people that are working get smaller raises because new people have to get paid more. So everybody's brought down into one pay level eventually.
And
that's
it
where
goes,
this ends.
And it goes back to what you were saying early about envy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had this conversation with a business owner about 4 years ago, and that's when they were talking about nationwide $15 an hour. And so I asked her, I said, well, what do you think about this? She goes, you know what? It's okay. Most of my employees are at $15 anyways. I said, okay, so you have some who aren't. And she goes, right. I said, so if you bring those people up to $15 an hour, the people who are making $15 or $18, they're going to see that they just got a $3 raise. So
the other people got
the other people. Right. They're going to see that the people making $12 just got a $3 raise. So now they're at 15. Don't you think the people that are 15 or 18 are going to be looking for the $3 raise? She goes, I didn't even think of that. You're right. No, I don't want minimum wage. Yeah. You know, I don't want to be $15 an hour because that will really impact me.
Well, even the businesses that think, well, I don't pay any of my people minimum wage, so it's not really going to affect me. Oh, yes, it is, because it's going to affect your suppliers. And when you go out to buy your lunch, those prices are going to rise, too. It affects everybody negatively.
Right. And it goes back to what you and Joe were talking about yesterday, where as a small business owner, we don't have the flexibility to negotiate with our suppliers like a big business does.
Mm-hmm.
So it really puts us at a disadvantage.
Representative Williams keeps bringing forward this bill in the state of Colorado that says, employees need to be able to just waive their right to minimum wage and negotiate with that employer, you know, in case they're trying to build some skills or learn a new trade or something. And that's a very good bill.
Is it now? Has it been introduced yet, or do you know?
Not so far, but I think he's been introducing it about every year. I did see that he introduced an amendment to the minimum wage law, 1210 from last year, which allows the cities to charge to raise their minimum wage. So he introduced that bill there too, an amendment there to that bill to let people, you know, in Denver waive that minimum wage requirement.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, ladies, let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. In studio with me is Patty Kergan and Susan Kochevar, both businesswomen. We're talking about forced minimum wage and the effects that it'll have on you, your families, and your communities. And ultimately, you know, very altruistically, that's easy to say this early in the morning, these PBIs think that they say they're helping people, but it's actually going to hurt families. It's going to hurt opportunity for people. We may start to see more and more empty storefronts as businesses, as restaurants close their doors. Steve, you said that you heard that there were just two down in South Denver that are closing, and that is going to start to hurt people, most definitely. Steve, your comment before we go to break.
Well, those two locations were the same business, per se, and they were technically outside the Denver city limits. So that's why I was asking, what was the effective range of the minimum wage thing?
But it still affects, even though it's in Denver, where the law is, it affects everybody around the metro area as well. We all live in the metro area. It affects everyone. So when Denver puts that into effect, it's actually like putting it into effect for the complete metro area.
Well, quite right. Maybe that's just exactly what happened at these two establishments, is that their wait staff was drawn into Denver, chasing a bigger wage.
Sorry, this is the third year that minimum wage has gone up due to an amendment placed in our state constitution 3 years ago. So as of this January, minimum wage went up 90 cents. So it's now $12 per hour, throughout the state.
Wow. Okay. Okay, let's go to break. Ladies, it always goes really too fast when you're here. So Assistant Coach Farr, Patty Kergan, Kim Munson, we'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. In studio is businesswomen Susan Kochevar, Patty Kergan. Ladies, it's great having you here. This is going by way too quickly. Patty Kergan, you have something on your mind.
Yes. So I just want to clarify for the listeners that right now the state minimum wage is $12 an hour. Last year at the Capitol, they passed a bill, a minimum wage bill, and it gave specifically five different entities could have their own minimum wage. So that's why Denver is now at $12.84.
But it couldn't go down. It had to be above the Colorado minimum wage. Okay.
Correct. So there's still four open opportunities, shall we say, for different entities.
Okay.
Now, real quick, the reason why my take is the reason why they picked five, it was to appease the rural community because they knew that they couldn't, you know, do this obnoxious per hour rate. So they so to appease them, it's like, okay, we'll just leave you alone, and you'll be at the state level, and you don't have to worry about being escalated up. So there's four other opportunities. So the Summit Daily just had a recent article, and it looks like up there the county itself is looking at a 75 cents per hour increase starting next year, 2021. So they would be the second entity to take advantage of this new law.
And were they one of the ones that were one of the five? So Summit County was one of the five?
Well, right now, Denver is the only one of the five. So
okay.
There's four other state communities that can take advantage of this law.
And was Summit County one
of
them?
So Summit County now has been holding hearings.
Okay.
So they had a commission, and they held their meetings, and they came out, and they said, we want to do this 75 cents per hour in addition to whatever the state minimum wage is. So it's not being accepted very readily.
Very well.
Right. So there's a commissioner out there. His name is Thomas Davison. And he has been, according to, this is coming out of the Summit Daily, who has been the most zealous proponent of raising the local minimum wage, has not budged from that position. He dismissed lingering objections to raising the local minimum wage, including the lack of town consensus. Quote, right now, they're waiting for the towns to agree to it, but that's not how government works, Davidson said to the board. And Kib, don't come after my throat with the following quote. He says, in America, government has to lead.
What country is he think he's living in?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Right. So they're not even, you keep saying, oh, they think they're helping the little guy. You know, No, he's saying government is the one that needs to lead, and they know best.
They know best. You know, I was listening in preparation for the show. I was listening yesterday to some of the committee hearings for House Bill 1210, which is the bill we're talking about for letting communities raise their minimum wage. And you can listen to Kimmy Lewis, the former state representative who passed earlier this year.
In December, right?
Yep. She was pleading for them not to pass this bill because she had onion warehouses that were prepared as soon as the bill passed to move their warehouses across the border because they cannot afford that minimum wage.
So we are going to see, I mean, between this and then the oil and gas bill and this family leave, this, I need to say it correctly, forced paid family leave that might be coming down the pike. Of course, if they move us towards single-payer health care, you said, Patty, that they, that these PBIs want to tax business owners another $400 million to shore up the unemployment a fund. I mean, this is really going to put the squeeze on businesses, and you are starting to see the effects. In our town, you know, Steve, you and I live close to each other. There have been three restaurant locations that have been vacant. And the other thing, Steve, when people start to go by vacant storefronts, I think it kind of takes something out of them. It doesn't seem like it's as prosperous. What do you think about that, Steve?
Well, I brought this up yesterday because of your former life before you became a talk show host. And so you're familiar with these particular
Maybe
properties.
We should clarify what that was. I served on city council for 4 years.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I have, you know, I only open my mouth to change feet. Anyway, these three locations in Lone Tree are very prime locations. One of them has been standing empty for at least 10 years. So there's obviously something going down there in this economy that nobody has been able to breathe life into them. And then right behind that are these other two, which are, again, very notable locations.
And then three businesses on South Pearl. And then Joe Otto said yesterday that he had heard from friends that, in fact, 18 to 20% of people working in the restaurant industry may lose their jobs. And so there may be a few that will be making a little bit more money, but look at the detrimental effects to that. And before we move on, I guess just a couple of things. I want to make sure, Patty, you said for our listeners, you can track all the new bills. And you can go to, and we'll probably get this out there, but it's leg.colorado.gov. And you go to that, and then you can actually see the drop-down menu. You can see bills, mm-hmm. and you can track all the bills, and you can actually read them. And I did used to think it was above my pay grade. It's not. Mm-mm. And so instead of getting into conversations with people, Susan Kochevar, about what something says because somebody told you this is what it says, read the bill, listen to the hearings, know what you're talking about. Right, Susan?
Yeah, you can listen to all those committee hearings. At the top on the right, you'll see listen and watch. And so I recommend listening to them. It helps a lot, especially while you're working. You can hear amendments and all the discussions, people that come to testify. That's really important. The other thing I like to do is look at the fiscal notes. Often they are a little bit easier to read and then go into the bill. But you do have to look at what the bill actually says.
Okay. And Patty, do you find that those fiscal notes are correct? As I mean, they give a try, but when you get into action, you know, after you've seen it into the future, well, say the bill's been passed and then you really see what the cost is going to be, sometimes it's not correct.
Oh, sometimes. I would say probably more times it's not correct than it is. And rumor has it for last year's bills, there was a lot of underestimates.
Underestimates, yes.
Right. So the cost, they don't even know where they're going to come up with the money.
Well, you know,
so that's one of the things about, we're looking at 2020 legislation. It's like, how can you bring up like this college debt relief for $14 million when you haven't even figured out how you're going to pay for all the programs that you passed last year? I think, you know, you need to look at that before you start giving us additional costs. Mm-hmm.
And to that, the thing that they cannot measure is the opportunity cost. That is what is lost when you're taking money from business owners who would expand their businesses, pay their people more, innovate new things. That is not measured, and that is, it's massive.
It is massive. And, you know, I think that there are PBIs who think that it's impossible to slow this quote-unquote hot economy here, but I think that we're starting to see the effects of that. So what do we do, ladies? What do we do? Susan Kochevar, we've got a couple of minutes. What would your solution be?
Try to pay attention to all the bills coming through. I know there's a lot of them. Listen to Kim's show. Call your legislator when stuff's brought to your attention. We have to pay attention to what's going on. You have to vote. You have to understand the policies that whoever's running for office, what those policies actually mean.
Okay, and Patty, what do you think? What's the solution? What should we do?
Be active and be a proponent, advocate for your beliefs. A lot of people, especially business owners, they don't have time to go down to the Capitol. You can now do an email and send it to the committee, and they have to read it. And I've heard that they're doing virtual testimony this year as well. So there are different avenues for your voice to be heard. And most important, stand up for your rights.
Okay. And we promise that we will keep you informed on this. We will look at these issues. We always strive to be factual, to be truthful. And we guarantee that we're going to pack a whole bunch of information in this hour. You can also listen to this evening from 10 to 11. They rebroadcast it here at KLZ. And then all the show recaps and podcasts are on my website as well. So, Patty Kirkin, thank you so much for being in studio, and thank you for all the good work that you do.
Thank you. I very much appreciate it.
And Susan Kochevar, thank you for being in studio, and thank you for being a valued partner of mine. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for all you do, and thank you for your research, Patty. It helps me. I'm trying to keep on top of things.
Okay, Great. Most definitely. You girls are going to like this quote from Thomas Jefferson. He said, "I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of taking care of them." That kind of knocks it out of the park,
yeah,
huh? So
he should be in government.
So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.